Okay, so my first presentation for the morning is going to be about wastewater bacteria isolations and then their effects on the vase life of cut zinnia. So bacteria in vase solutions can lead to wilt, bent neck, desiccation of petals and leaves, and then also petal drop. You know, this photo looks very, very nice and sort of artistic, but that flower is very sad because likely of the bacteria that's in that vase water there. The effects of bacteria concentrations differ with cut flower species. We see this in the literature. So carnation, iris, alstroemeria, and tulip are tolerant to fairly high concentrations of bacteria, 10^8 colony-forming units in the vase water. But rose is a lot more sensitive, a lot more finicky, and bacteria counts as low as 10^5 colony-forming units per milliliter have been shown to reduce vase life. So therefore, the number of bacteria in the vase solution may not be the primary cause of shortened vase life in all cut flower species. So, you know, it may actually be the bacteria species that's in the vase water that's having an effect. Some bacteria decrease vase life. Some have, you know, little or no effect. Because some bacteria produce enzymes that can degrade plant tissue, produce hormones like ethylene. You know, we all know why that's a problem. And then exopolysaccharides that can get sort of gummy. It's like the slime that bacteria produce that can clog up the vasculature of the stem. Bacteria have been isolated from different species of cut flowers. A few have been isolated. There's from rose, carnation, gerbera, and chrysanthemum. But work hasn't really been done on zinnia, which is an important field cut flower in the United States. So we chose to work with the cultivar Giant Wine, which is commonly used. It's in the Binary series. It's commonly used in an important locally grown field crop. The flowers are known to have water balance-related vase life issues, so they tend to show a lot of petal wilt, and the stems flop over. And they're also known to be a dirty flower. So they carry, the stems have hairs along them, so they tend to carry a lot of bacteria and dirt and whatever from the field, and then that gets into the bucket and can cause some issues. So there, we thought they'd be a good candidate for these bacteria studies. So our objectives, we had two of them. The first one was simply just to isolate and identify some of the bacteria species that are in the vase water font that zinnias are in. And then we wanted to investigate the effects that each of those pure bacteria cultures would have on vase life. So for the bacteria isolation, we put several stems in a vase, like you can see in the photo. We put them in our post-harvest environment, which is the environment we used for the subsequent studies. It's meant to mimic a typical home environment. And then at senescence, so once the flowers had completely died, we plated some of the vase water samples and see what we got. So we got something like this, and we just from this one plate, you can see several different kinds of bacteria that are showing up here. And we collected these colonies based on, you know, different colors, different sizes, different shapes. Some of them had, like, scalloped edges, and then different textures. So whether they were kind of a matte finish or glossy, you know, that says something about the exopolysaccharides that they're producing. And we made pure cultures out of those. So we made sure we had just one bacteria in each of our cultures. And these are some of the bacteria that we isolated and had identified. So we had several different ones, Brevundomonas and Pantoea, some Pseudomonas, Serratia, Chrysobacterium. The two that are in green, the E. coli K12 and the Pseudomonas marginalis, were two bacteria species that we didn't isolate from those bacteria studies, but we Pseudomonas marginalis had been previously isolated from zinnia in the Mathiasi lab at UNC, so we wanted to include that in these studies when we did our inoculations. And then E. coli K12 is a common laboratory-adapted E. coli strain that's used, so we wanted to see how that would affect vase life as well. So we included those two in with the ones we isolated from our studies. So we've had 10 bacteria treatments total, and we made those into liquid cultures so we could easily add them to the vase solutions. We inoculated to 10 to the 5 colony-forming units per milliliter. We also had a sterilized DI water and a nutrient broth control. So the nutrient broth control was just what we cultured the bacteria in, but with no bacteria. So we wanted to make sure the nutrient broth wasn't having, you know, a positive or extremely negative effect on vase life. So that was a total of 12 treatments. We had 3 stems per jar, 3 jars per treatment, and then we replicated this entire thing 4 times. The data that we collected, vase life, water uptake by weight, final vase solution, bacteria counts by serial dilution. So these are, those plates illustrate the serial dilutions where you count the individual colonies, and that gives you an idea of how many bacteria were in your vase solution. And then initial and final vase solution pH and electrical conductivity. For our statistical analysis, we used analysis of variance procedures and the GLM procedure. Our means were separated using Tukey's studentized range at alpha equals 0.05, and we used SAS for all of our analysis. So here's our results. So the two columns that are highlighted, well, that are in the darker blue color are our controls. So we had our DI water control and our nutrient broth control. And the main statistically significant differences we got here were at the beginning of the graph and at the end of the graph. So the Pseudomonas fulva and the E. coli K12 were had significantly greater vase lives than the nutrient broth control, Pseudomonas marginalis, the Pantoea anonitis, and the Rhizobium radiobacter. As you can see, everything else was sort of in between, which is what we expected, because there are a lot of bacteria that, you know, don't really have significant effects on vase life, but those two endpoints, those extremes, are important. We found no significant differences in several of our the parameters that we studied, but they actually tell us a lot even when they're not significant, so that's a good thing about science. Our termination symptoms, there were no significant differences between the bacteria treatments. You know, like I said in the introduction, the bacteria and just general flower decline, you're going to see a lot of petal wilt, desiccation, blueing, and bent neck. So we didn't see any significant differences there. The vase solution pH and EC didn't vary between the bacteria treatments. The final vase solution pH ranged from 6.2 to 6.4, so we weren't seeing any bacteria that were producing acids or extra, you know, basic things. And then the EC ranged from 0.03 to 0.05, so we weren't seeing extra, you know, maybe tissue degradation or extra products that the bacteria were producing. The bacteria counts between all of the vase solutions were not significantly different and ranged from 1.8 to 9.0 times 10 to the 6 colony-forming units per milliliter. So, you know, there were differences in vase life for some of the bacteria, but the concentrations weren't significantly different by the end of vase life. And then water uptake wasn't significantly different. We took water uptake measurements from the first stem and the entire study was terminated. So at that point, the bacteria growth may not have been rapid enough to have a significant effect on uptake. And then it was found that water uptake in carnation wasn't inhibited until the bacteria concentrations got up to 10 to the 8. So and you see ours only got up to 10 to the 6. So it might have been a timing thing there to see differences in water uptake. So looking at to get an idea of, you know, what might be going on here with these bacteria, it's important to look at the characteristics of the bacteria. And I'm not going to go into, like, full detail about some of these, but just hit the highlights just for timing's sake. Pseudomonas marginalis, that's known to produce an enzyme that breaks down pectin. So it could be causing something like we see in the photo over here, where these stem ends are frayed at the bottom, where they've kind of been eaten away. And then they also, you know, that breaks down the middle lamella and cell walls of the plant tissues, which, you know, you can see why that would be a problem. You know, that inhibits water uptake through the end of the stem there. And then the Pantoea nonatus is known to cause center rot in onion seed. So, you know, that likely breaks down tissue as well and could cause the detrimental effects on vase life. And then Rhizobium radiobacter was also at that low end on the graph. It's not considered phytopathogenic, but so it's still kind of still trying to figure out what's going on there that had the lowest vase life of all of them. And then the nutrient broth control, that was also down there at the end of the graph. You know, basically became a source of nutrition for the bacteria that are already on the stem. You know, like I said, zinnia is considered to be a dirty flower. The hairs on the stem carry bacteria. So those bacteria just had a source of nutrition, and they were all ready to proliferate. And the number of bacteria was similar to all the other treatments. Even though we started with sterilized water, the nutrient broth was sterile. When we put those stems in, they just took off. The bacteria from the stem took off. And like I said, the detrimental bacteria already on the stem could have proliferated. And then those bacteria species that were sort of in the middle of that bar graph generally were not phytopathogenic and tended to have no benefits to other plant species or no effects. The last two, we could not be identified to the species, so it's really hard to say what particular effects they could have been having on the plant tissue without further identification, because this Crisiobacterium is known to not break down pectin and cellulose, but there are some Crisiobacterium species that will do that. But as you can see, you know, Bacillus had some antifungal properties, so you know, it kind of just gives us an idea of what could be going on with those bacteria in the vase water. And then the beneficial bacteria species. I'm using beneficial very loosely here. They were just on the upper end of that bar graph. The Pseudomonas fulva, it's known to be antagonistic to fungal and bacterial pathogens of rice. So it could be, you know, doing some of those similar things with zinnia for us. And then the E. coli K12, like I mentioned earlier, is a weakened laboratory strain of E. coli. It's non-human pathogenic. Usually when I say we want to add E. coli to the vase water or flowers, people get a little nervous because, you know, you're E. coli and sometimes you freak out a little bit. But it's non-human pathogenic. It's been in the lab for so long that it's lost all of its desire to be pathogenic. And not that bacteria have desires, excuse me. But it has a safe history of commercial use, and it's not known to have any adverse effects on plants. So some ideas of how these, you know, how biocontrol bacteria work and how those previous two bacteria species may be having, you know, sort of their beneficial effect is that, you know, biocontrol bacteria they prevent growth and proliferation of phytopathogens by producing toxic metabolites that, you know, fight the ones that they're competing with. They outcompete for nutrition and colonization sites. So they may just be growing faster, attaching faster, and therefore outcompeting, you know, other detrimental species. And then some biocontrol bacteria trigger defense response related genes in plants. So, you know, in conclusion, we found that the pure bacteria cultures had differing effects on post-harvest life. Some were detrimental, some were neutral, and some, you know, maybe beneficial. And then the bacteria species may be more important than just the concentration of bacteria in the vase water. So this could lead to possibly some, you know, biocontrol bacteria to add to vase solutions, which we have continued to look into, and it looks very promising for, you know, use as a organic floral preservative. And, you know, this could also be used for making vase solutions that target particular detrimental bacteria as well. So in summary, I'd like to thank my funding sources, Smithers Oasis and Floral Life, and the Department of Horticultural Science, and then also the support our technicians and the NC State Plant Disease and Insect Clinic that helped us to ID all of the bacteria species.